Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, and I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Fuse, the insurance marketing software that skyrockets your retention, boosts your policy per customer, and makes your clients love your agency without you having to hire more staff, technologists, or programmers. Visit agencyrevolution.com. Get a demo. I made a spontaneous decision. About a month or so ago, I had lined up three interviews in a row, all of which I felt were practical tactical. So each of the guests in that series delivered street smart, real world marketing, which is a little bit of a 30,000 foot zoom down from, spiraling kind of way up above the industry with industry thought leaders and taking a look at, like a big weather map, a hurricane map. Where are the trends and where are the forces? Because we really need to know what they are. But I know that every now and then we gotta land the plane and get boots on the ground and do real world marketing. So lined up a series of three sets of guests, and they all live in the real world and market in the real world. So I called it a three-part masterclass in modern marketing. I just added a fourth, and that was spontaneous. But since I made up the series, I guess I get to do that. I want to introduce Zach Gould and Matt Nymoli. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Matt. And they're co-founders and principals of GNN Insurance in Massachusetts. They're marvelous people, very generous with what they've learned, and just smart. And they were really transparent with their success and how they did it. So please pay attention to this one. Few things that we covered. They went from zero about eight and a half years ago. No agency, no revenue, to over 10,000 clients. So that's pretty good clip of growth, the kind I like to see. And we talk about how they did it. Hint, it really is about something that you've probably heard me talk about before. Strategy first, then tactics. Because strategy without tactics is tricks, and tricks are for kids. But they have a good strategy, which they share very openly, and then they execute on it tactically really, really well, and they share exactly what they do, and in some cases, what they do with the day, what a day looks like. And also, in addition to this client attraction strategy, which I think you'll get very quickly and you'll learn about very quickly. They also talk about how they use certain forms of digital. In this case, we talked a great deal about social and how they do social selling. So really, without further ado, I think this one stands on its own. And I think that you will probably agree with me. These young people are game changers in the industry. They don't have a lot of the bad habits that coming from the past. And I say bad habits somewhat kindly, because to some extent, it's just stuff that that worked really well in the 90s. Well, it's not now. It's 2018. We're really approaching the end of another decade really, really fast. So it's a new day, and there are new behaviors. So final reminder, if you have somebody that you would like me to interview, tell me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. If you have a recommendation, a nomination, or you just want to share something, if you're enjoying the show, hey, let me know. That's almost like a cup of coffee for me. All righty, without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Zach and Matt. Zach and Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
great. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Well, that, at least one of you is excited about it. So, all right. So, for the audience, I don't often get the opportunity to interview two people at once, and always anticipate there's going to be some element of mass confusion and wondering who's actually talking. So we're going to try to do this as organized as possible. The two of you have a terrific story, and I think it, to some extent, it's a story about the modern age of insurance and the modern age of insurance marketing. So that's what we're going to be diving into. So number one, thanks so much for joining us. Number two, how about a real short thumbnail from each of you about who you are, and then we're going to talk about the agency and some of the wonderful things that you're doing to grow. So randomly, Zach, you want to go first? Zach Gould?
Love to. Yeah, love to. So my name is Zach. I grew up in Southborough, and that's where I still live, which is super exciting. I went to the University of Connecticut, and I was kind of, I think, one of the many people in insurance that, you know, studied risk management insurance. That's a joke. Not many did.
Yeah.
So I went through risk management insurance at UConn. My major was eight people in the University of Connecticut. So I got a business degree with eight people in my major at UConn, which is a unicorn.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And every single company, like Travelers, the Hartford, etc., I had underwriting jobs lined up for days as a junior because every single company wanted underwriters. And my professor, junior year of college, just sat me down and basically said, you know, this, I don't think this path is for you. You're not really one of those kind of class guys who sits down and studies and what have you. I think you should kind of take a look at a sales class. So with his recommendation, I took a professional sales class in 2005.
Was that at school? Was that at UConn, the sales class?
Correct. Yeah,
okay.
Professional sales class. And the professional sales class was in the School of Business, but it was for anybody. And it was the second, it was run by Pete Peterson.
Okay.
And it was the second or third year, or maybe the first or second year it had been run. So it was basically public speaking and how to deal with objections. And one of the presenters was Liberty Mutual. And they came in and they described about how a sales career could really work at Liberty. And I liked it.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
I said, sure, you know, 22 grand or 25 grand guaranteed salary and commissions on top. Like, sounds like I'm a millionaire. So that felt like $1 million in college.
Yeah.
So I took the job, and I got accepted to Bridgeport, Connecticut, but my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, got a job in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I said, you know what, we've only been dating for 2 months, but maybe I can get transferred to Boston. Got transferred to Boston, never worked a day in Bridgeport, and that was one of the luckiest things that happened to me, because I never would have met the Matt Namoli.
Okay.
Who was on this call as well.
All right.
And so Matt and I were, Matt is going to describe his story. He was in Framingham. I was in Boston. We were the top two sales reps in the entire country at Liberty Mutual. And we were introduced by one of our mutual friends at the company saying, you guys shouldn't be pitted against each other. You guys should really understand that you guys both hustle. You guys are both great guys. Why don't you just grab a beer? And so in 2006, we grabbed a beer, and Matt wooed me over. You know, he's a redhead, he's in shape, everything kind of looked good for me, and yeah, so
okay.
Here we are, but I'll let Matt tell his side.
Okay, yeah, so Matt, yes, T-H-E, Matt, let's hear your story.
Yeah, cheap beer won Zach over early. Now it's more of a little bit higher end.
Okay.
But
it still works.
But I didn't grow up in the area. I lived actually all over the world. My parents were Peace Corps volunteers, so we lived overseas in West Africa for a while.
Uh-huh.
Germany, a bunch of places. And so naturally, Peace Corps volunteer parents, you'd naturally want to go into property and casualty insurance. It's an obvious segue.
Both my parents were social workers, so you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I grew up at high school in Maryland, and then played baseball, and so I wanted to play baseball in college. Recruited by a couple different universities, and I ended up going to the University of Vermont. Played Division I baseball there for 4 years, studied hard, worked hard, did well in school, and my senior year was looking for an internship in sales, some sales internship that I could also navigate the crazy baseball schedule. And Liberty Mutual offered one for like $19 an hour, which was nuts for a college senior. And the day that I started, funny thing is, the day that I started interning for them was the same day the manager quit. So I had an internship with Liberty.
Was it something I said?
Yeah, I thought it was like cologne or something. The internship with Liberty for a couple months, like at least 20 hours a week or 15 hours a week. And enjoyed the team there, enjoyed the process, and naturally it was an opportunity after college, came down and started working and selling for Liberty in Framingham. Zach had mentioned how we met and how we connected, but that's kind of the path that I took.
Okay, so then the two of you guys had the beer, and you started talking. How long were you?
We talked before the beer. I mean, okay. there was like an opening,
all right.
And then there was beer. Yeah.
Okay. So the infamous beer. So how long were you talking about breaking out and starting your own independent insurance agency before you did it?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. But going back one step, there's one thing we're really proud of is that our partnership has lasted longer than that bar. That bar closed down a couple years ago, so we like outlasted it.
Okay.
But number two, we did not start talking right away about it because you got to paint the picture. Like, where are the top two sales reps in the entire country?
Two of you were the top two in the country.
Yeah, and so like,
okay.
We had the type of monetary reward a 22 to 25 year old would desire. We had the recognition. We had assistance. There was a lot of good things happening, but we started to both have that little bit of pain point into, you know what? Like, I would tweak a little bit of this. Isn't really great for the client. I don't think I did a really good job because it's mm-hmm. one size fit all, and I grew up with a father who's an entrepreneur. He owns his own financial practice. But my path was always learn a little bit, then take over my company. But I never wanted to do that. I always wanted to do something different. And it's kind of interesting. Matt and I, the more we shared, the more we became closer. We started to realize that both of us kind of wanted to do something for ourselves and create something. And when you're 23 and a half, 24, that's good enough to start drawing up maps and drawing up plans. And so I would say about a year, Matt, maybe a year and a half after we met, we started talking about it.
Yeah, I think it was about a year and a half after. And then we talked and kind of planned it loosely and then a little bit more intensely for 18 months.
So,
business planning, marketing planning.
So kickoff was what year? How many years ago?
January 2010 we started.
Okay, so it's a eight and a half year old agency going on 9 years, yeah?
Yeah, and yeah. So, I mean, in general, I think we're both builders and expanders, and when you work for a Fortune 100 company, it's great because you can expand pretty quickly and build and get to hit certain ceilings, but when you once you reach a certain limit, it is kind of claustrophobic in ways, and so this was a natural next step, and we didn't know necessarily what the process would look like, but we just kind of took the leap right around the time when the recession hit. So
yeah, no, I've been there. I know what that's like. Okay.
Yeah.
And so fast forward, we have an agency. You have an agency that has over 10,000 customers. You are an Inc. 5,000 fast growth company. You've been recognized as it one of the best places to work in Massachusetts?
You got it.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and there are 34 people that are on the team enjoying being part of your culture. So it's a great story. So let's dive into what did you do to make it happen? So I'm going to ask you, at least to me, an interesting question. Okay. Because I want to address this one. So you guys are, naturally, it sounds like you have the natural profile of an entrepreneur. So at a very young age, you were both like number one and number two sales rep in the country for Liberty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, who was number one? Who was number two?
Depends on the year.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
us girls don't kiss and tell, that kind of stuff. But
Okay. So
the good thing is we flipped 07 and 08, and so at least we can look back and say, like, oh, we both shared stage.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I want to address a concern that listeners might have, like, oh, these guys, you know, they're like 16 years old and they're already the best salespeople in the country. What would you say to somebody who's like, hey, I'm not necessarily, you know, an A-plus player, maybe not the best salesperson in the world, but I really want to share similar kind of success you have. What would you say to somebody who didn't have, like, that success just coming out of the chute?
Well, you know, Zach and I will kind of flip-flop here and chime in, but two things kind of come to my mind right off the bat. One, you know, I think self-awareness is critical when entrepreneurship is on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
If entrepreneurship is appealing, if business ownership is appealing to you, but you don't have necessarily what it takes to really take the risks, stick to it, and go all in, then it might not be the best path. And the second piece is that I think that if you aren't necessarily the best salesperson in the world at whatever you do, that's okay, but you need to find someone who is. And if you're going to go into business, like the lead gen, the relationship management, and the top end of the funnel is so, so vital. And you could be the best operationally minded individual out there, great fact finder, super, super process oriented. Frankly, that would have helped us a ton early on having someone that was like that. But you got to be able to go create leads and convert them into sales, or you don't have a company.
Now, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong here, your approach to lead gen, it to some extent, it's street leather and hustle, right? It's kind of boots on the ground and creating relationships. Is that an important part of it?
Yeah, so I think going back to your question, though, the other question you asked before, it kind of leads
all right
to this question, is that you, first off, success is a mindset. So, Matt and I were the top two in the country on a rep ranking at a Fortune 100 company.
Yeah.
Honestly, who cares? Like, I never bragged about that. I didn't go around, like, holding my head up high. And I don't really value money the way a typical person does.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter.
Right.
It was more of a mindset that we could do the mission. We could do the task. Like, and we had jobs. But we were really more studying the industry. And that leads me to my point. Like, Matt and I got where we were not because we were the best cold callers.
Right.
Or not because we could sell insurance the best. It's because we were both very successful at creating relationships. And if you're successful at creating relationships, you just got to find a niche that you can dominate. We found the niche of people purchasing real estate. And we realized that if we created niches, if we focused on that niche and created relationships with people who are influencers in the home buying industry, well, then referrals will flow. And that's where we focused. That was not our focus at Liberty Mutual, because in that time and still, they do not have a very good home product. So we were told to sell auto.
Uh-huh.
Relationships there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we saw long-term, even when we were at Liberty Mutual, this is like 09, 08, they were already installing kiosks in dealerships so people could walk in and get their auto insurance quote right there. That is a telltale sign that they don't really need the agent. So we could see that, oh, my God, we sell so much auto there, they're getting rid of that, and we think home is way more of a valuable sale. So that's really kind of how we reverse engineered how to open up the company, because we found a differentiating factor.
Okay, so it sounds like one of the core principles of the success of your agency is building strong relationships, right, number one?
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you strategically zeroed in on relationships with partners that in the real estate industry that could be a source of lead generation for you. Am I reading that model right?
You are.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
home buying process for us, we identified that as an awesome opportunity to capture clients that are valuable clients at the best time you can get them.
Okay.
Because the closing ratio is the highest, the retention is the highest, the policies per client is the highest, the time cycle of the sales cycle is the shortest. And the loss ratios are really strong. We have multiple parties that are evaluating the credit of the borrowers as well as inspecting the quality of the property. Mm-hmm. So you just for personal lines minded individuals, which we were, that was our experience. It was naturally the best opportunity to kind of zero in on. And instead of focusing on 8 to 10 million people in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of salespeople in general will look at, oh my God, the pie is so huge, I have so much opportunity, I'm just going to go capture it all. We said, screw that, let's focus on the 50,000 homes that are being purchased each year.
Is that what it is? Is that what your research
in Massachusetts,
shows? Yeah, 50,000 homes. Okay.
Well, 40 on a bad year, 60 on a good year, but mm-hmm. That's our pie.
Right.
So we forget everything else. We literally punt every other opportunity, and we just say, hey, let's just focus in on that pie and try to carve out the most we can. And so getting 5 to 6%, as we will this year, of that 50,000 is a monster year. And we still look at it as a great opportunity to expand even
okay.
more.
Okay. You did say something a moment ago that is like describes marketing nirvana, okay? It's the ideal client, which in your case, you know, you describe the person with the highest closing ratio, the most policies per customer, the longest retention, and a low loss ratio. It's like, it's like, how do we make money in this industry? Well, it's good to have a good closing ratio, multiple policies per customer, and long retention. And so you've zeroed in on a demographic that statistically meets those qualifications in personal lines probably about as well as any demographic on the planet. Right? I mean, that's really pretty interesting. And I'm not sure if that was lucky happenstance, but you've certainly kind of you dove into the trifecta of closing multiple policies and retention. So let's talk about.
Yeah, I think we just described how it wasn't lucky. You know, if you actually look back, like that was, I don't know. I think that's the opposite of luck. And there are some instances of luck, you know, you need mm-hmm. to get a successful. Like our first appointment, we both think was lucky, meaning appointment with an insurance carrier.
Right on.
Literally, the guy retired a month after appointing us. I think he just checked a box and said, "Forget it."
And I'm out of here.
17 companies.
Yeah,
that was after 17 companies said no. So I mean, you know, that was maybe a little bit of skill, but it was also luck. It was timing. But when you look at what Matt just detailed out about the home buying process, I mean, we talked about the recession casually, about it being a bad time to open.
Yeah.
Well, in a recession in a home buying market, 40,000 homes are still sold.
Uh-huh.
That's incredible.
Okay, right.
Now,
yeah.
In a recession, if you're just trying to throw a dart in the ocean in Massachusetts, there's 7 million people or so. If you're in a recession and you don't have a niche, you better save somebody money or else they're not going to move because money's tight.
Yeah.
Right? But if you have a niche and you got 40,000 people who are still purchasing property, we still have the same size market. I mean,
uh-huh.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it really, finding your niche, I think if you, the more podcasts you do, et cetera, and the more people you meet, if you were to ask just like an insurance agency owner or an insurance agent, like, what's your niche? You're going to shake your head after because so many, and that's why I think this
right.
industry is interesting because so many people don't have that exact customer. And I mean the from an age perspective to where they're potentially moving to their income level to how many kids they have to if they're married or not. And we have that down to the exact person. And if more insurance agent owners had that exact person narrowed down, marketing becomes easy.
Got it. Well, I think one of the things that that you exemplify is that strategy trumps tactics. Tactics, of course, very, very useful, but they can be chaotic and people can be chasing the next shiny new thing in the absence of a strategy that gives them an alignment. So you've got something that aligns, it seems, all of the direction of the agency and probably the behaviors of pretty much all 34 people who work there. You're going in a common direction. So you had mentioned top of the funnel lead generation. And so let's start looking at your marketing process there. How do you get people into the top of the funnel? And I suppose we need to talk about two different groups. At the top of the funnel, there can be the
referring partner, and at the top of the funnel, ultimately, there's the insurance customer. So where do you want to start?
Well, I think we'll start with B2B, which is the COI, the referral partner. And I think that's our secret sauce, which isn't very secret, but we went all in on networking. And from very, very early on, even though we're a scratch agency and we had so many different hats we were wearing, we were taking out the trash and filling the toner and, you know, I mean, literally doing everything.
What do you mean there's no coffee this morning? Okay.
Right. Yeah, well, coffee would have been a good day. But I think we did a good job early on at understanding, going back to what you said with strategy, we understood the importance of allocating considerable amounts of our time to networking, to connecting and building relationships with those who could influence their home buyers, their borrowers, their clients, to refer them to us.
Okay.
And so, and when you look at networking, I think there's three different types of networkers. The first, they don't network at all. They just have a handful of people they maybe work with, but they really don't network at all.
Okay.
The second are those who get out a ton, and they network all over the place. They are in B&I groups, force networking groups. They go to Chamber of Commerce events, et cetera, and they tell anyone and everyone what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The third, and which we think are the most mature networkers and the most successful networkers, are the ones that just network within their niche. They only stay within their niche. So the really top of our funnel is generated through warm introductions of clients that value the opinion of the referral partner. And so we just focus on mortgage lenders, realtors, attorneys, financial advisors, and people in Massachusetts who influence their buyers. And that was our networking for literally 8 years. That's all we did when it came to networking.
Okay, so quick question. Do either of you sell insurance policies? Like, actually?
No, not anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, not since February of 2015, I think.
Okay, so it's been 3-4 years, but you did for a while, right? So,
oh, yeah.
Okay. And so now let's break this down. You know, let's say I was going to tail you for a day, and this is a day where you're saying, I'm going to go create some new relationships in my network. How do you do that?
Zach, do you want to run with with a day, like maybe pre when we were selling and business development?
Well, yeah, to answer your question directly, we don't really do that.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. So I just want to be as transparent as possible. Like, we don't ever get up and say, I'm going to go make some relationships. How am I going to do this?
Okay.
So let me just tell you, like, how our day is. So Matt and I, we have, I'm not saying this because I think other people should do it. Matt and I are very self-aware on what our strengths are personally, and we delegate out the rest. We never delegate something that we haven't done ourselves. So sales is a great example. Matt and I, we think we're the two best salespeople out there. Doesn't mean other people can't do it. It means we need to delegate, train, and make sure the right people are in place to do it.
Right.
So we do not book our own appointments. We don't book, you know, speaking engagements or what have you. We don't, you know, do a lot of things. Our schedules are kind of prearranged for us in a way.
My buddy Jill takes care of that stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So, and that's not to sound pompous. That's just because that's not our strength.
Right.
And we don't want to follow up with someone 17 times to get the best coffee shop.
And so
like that's not a good use of our time.
So,
and I don't want to look up a Newbury Street in Boston and say, how about this shop? And then the referral partner say, oh, I didn't like coffee there last time. Like, it's just a waste of time.
So we've cleared out everything except your unique ability or your personal gift. So then what is left?
Yeah. So this is what we do. So in essence, like, Matt and I wake up. We both have different morning routines. You can look at those on Babylon, on our Facebook and YouTube pages. Like, we do our morning routines to get our mindset in the right place. And then we open up our calendar. We go to where we're going. And wherever we're going, we typically have a phone call on the way. Mm-hmm. And that phone call almost always is either mentoring another insurance agent across the country, checking in on a referral partner that specifically requested to talk to us, maybe calling a teammate, maybe calling our leadership team, whoever, but we're using that time wisely. We get to the meeting in the right mindset because we're doing stuff well. We have that meeting with a referral partner or whomever and really kind of spend in the moment. That could be new or that could be existing or that could be an existing introducing a new. all works.
Okay, so let's say
you
it's
have a, that kind of coffee meeting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, so on that moment, let's say they are a new relationship. What's the nature of the conversation?
Yeah, Michael, just to...
So, I panic and I call Matt. I don't have that.
Well, we do conference calls, you know, FaceTime
okay.
conference calls, which
oh,
we talk about.
All right.
So, I think, you know, where we are now versus where we were for years is different. We've matured, we've built systems, we understand how to run a business much more effectively. There was like a pre-structure and a post-structure. And our pre-structure, when we were wearing all the hats, and I kind of alluded to the question you alluded to earlier, you know, the best way for us to get meetings is to just ask people to introduce us. Mm-hmm. And that would be current clients. If we help the client, we said, hey, like, you bought a car from yada yada, like, who'd you get your loan from when you bought your house? Could you make an introduction to your loan officer? We'd ask realtors to introduce us to loan officers, vice versa. We'd ask attorneys to introduce us to financial planners. We would just ask for introductions, because that warm introduction to someone in your own
yeah.
network is the most powerful way to get a meeting. It's the
Got
most
it.
Successful way.
And then you have
so
the
really,
meeting, right? So what?
Yeah, and then...
Uh-huh. I'm curious. Actually, yeah, what's the nature of that meeting? So in other words, you establish relationship, but presumably you make some promise of value.
Yeah, well, what's the book, Zach? How to Win Friends and Influence Others.
Okay.
The famous yeah, book, right?
Dale Carnegie.
Yeah. Win Friends and Influence
yeah.
People.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the main premise? The main premise of that is you can win over everyone if you just ask them what matters to them and listen and ask great questions, right? Like, that's really be interested, be present, and ask a ton of really questions to learn about them and get them talking about themselves and what they care about.
And
that's what we do.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Literally, we go through the meeting and we dig deep to find out everything about the person, not just personally, professionally, all their pain points, everything that how they get their business, what their network looks like,
mm-hmm.
what they would remove out of their day-to-day if they could, what pain points they have that, you know, they're constantly running into, what goals they have, you know, how they drip and stay in touch with old clients, how do they add value to their referral network. And in doing so, we're focusing 100% on them, and they're telling us valuable
yeah.
information.
Okay, so you're actually asking them fairly intimate questions about their business life.
Yeah,
right?
Michael, that's a good point. So there's nothing more frustrating in my, well, not nothing, but I get very frustrated when someone asks a question that they don't care about the answer. So a good example is if I started this phone call and say, hey, Michael, how's things? Like, I don't care. That's not a good question.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's an icebreaker sometimes, but, you know, maybe you should already know how things are for the other person. So what Matt and I really do is we're not trying to get super deep and super heady, but during this meeting, we're asking questions we actually care about the answer. And it relates to interesting discussion. And the questions we typically ask are either very deep in business process, very interested in networking, like how can I introduce you, how can I help grow your business?
Yeah.
And also to see if they need help. Like we actually, with all of our heart in that meeting, want to help. Because for two reasons. One, it creates impact. And two, we might be able to obtain value from them.
I have two
so
questions.
So we go in with the giver's mindset
yeah.
and we ask questions
with the giver's mindset.
About the answer, and it relates to a good conversation.
Okay. Did you say giver's mindset?
Correct.
Yeah, that's a beautiful term. So I have two questions. First one is, have you discovered that when you meet these people, the mortgage brokers and the lenders and so on and so forth, the real estate agents, and they're meeting with you as insurance agents, do you have a lot of other agents that are like competing for their attention, or are these guys saying, oh, this is an interesting and unique conversation?
Yeah, it's a variety. We see anything and everything out
okay.
there. I mean, maybe 9 years ago, if we met with a loan officer and they said to us, hey, I work with three really good insurance agents, thanks but no thanks.
Fair
we
enough,
might like,
right.
We're like, okay, all right, well, moving on.
Okay.
And now if someone works with an insurance agent, we applaud that. You know, that's great, because what that means is they already refer. They already have that built into their system.
Uh-huh.
All we have to do is add more value than the next.
So then that's my next question is, what is it that you think you do, or what promise of value can you make that's above and beyond what they're currently getting?
Well, we won't know until they tell us what matters.
Well, okay, so typically, what are the kinds of things that arise?
Yeah, so
you can't ask you can't ask us a direct question. We're just going to rephrase
it.
Yeah, there's a number. I'll throw out a couple.
I want the recipe for the secret sauce. That's my job to get it.
Yeah. Well, hey, we haven't mastered. We feel like we're mastering every day.
Yeah.
Running a business.
Uh-huh.
And so we really understand all the ins and outs and structure, process, accountability, systems, people, everything. And so a lot of top-end loan officers, top-end realtors, top-end attorneys who do a lot of volume are just basically stuck in their business. They have a hard time team building. They have a hard time systematizing their business. They have a hard time creating accountability and getting everyone rowing in the same direction. And so a lot of value that we can add to top-end producers is how to make them more efficient, how to get them out of their own way, how to actually create systems that work.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big one, especially for those that are producing a lot. If those that are not producing many, who just want a referral here and there, it's not really going to be the best relationship for us.
Got it. All right. So you've got my notes from our previous conversations says that you have over 1,000 referring partners. Right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yep.
So I want to walk through this part of the funnel. So you've established relationships with over 1,000 of them. What do you do now to maintain, strengthen, deepen, and nurture those relationships?
Yeah, that's another great question. So every relationship is different, as we said, and Matt and I do a couple things very well. Again, going back to my previous statement, we're not going to do anything that we don't care about the answer. So we're not going to mail Starbucks gift cards. We're not going to mail Dunkin' Donuts gift cards. We're not going to share commission. We're not going to do anything where it's just there's no value there. We do a lot of personal touches depending on what the referral partner engages with. So if our referral partners are heavy on social media, we're going to do a lot of interaction with them. We're going to make sure that we know that we're interested in what they're doing. We're going to comment on their stuff. We're going to engage with their stuff. We're going to advertise their stuff. We're going to make sure that they know that we are in supporting of how they get business. If there are other introductions we can make, we make a lot of introductions. In the previous years, like 2010 to 2017, we'd be out, you know, a bunch of nights of the week together and separate, really spending time at like their events and bringing people to them and et cetera.
Right.
Now, we focus much more on other drip campaigns, non-email, non-phone call if possible. And what I mean by that is we focus a lot on social media. We do a lot of texting. We do a lot of different ways where their phone isn't blowing up.
So,
Matt and I don't do a lot of emails, so if we emailed our referral partners, it would be authentic.
Yeah, Michael, perfect example, early on, if we met with a really high-end loan officer who did a ton of transactions, if our value to them was offered as, you know, I'll give you $10 or a Starbucks gift card every time you refer, or anytime I have an opportunity to refer myself or someone else buying a home, I'll refer them to you, That's really limited value, and it's gonna dry up quickly, and you cannot scale networks like that.
Right.
So early on, introducing a really good real estate agent that we networked with and then we built a relationship with to a really high-end loan officer and almost playing matchmaker created way more referrals to that loan officer than we could have ever created over years. And then it's just a matter of really helping them and their clients on the insurance front. We don't talk too much about it on the insurance, on our processes internally.
Mm-hmm.
We have the best team, best process when it comes to people buying homes. Like a proven system that works so well so that speed, convenience, pricing, everything works. And frankly, if you're a high-end producer in any industry, your partnerships, you really rely on them to remove hurdles and remove obstacles to get to the finish line. That's the most value you can offer.
Okay, so one last question about the relationships with the referring partners, and then I want to jump over to the other side of the business, the actual customers who purchase insurance from you. Your referring partners, okay? You have over 1,000 of them, And you try to, obviously, make the relationships as real as possible, but 1,000 is 1,000. Now, you've probably identified some 80-20 principle, right? So some of them are giving you lots of referrals. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Do you do anything like get-togethers, meetings, anything where you sponsor something and provide almost like a networking event in and of itself, or is that not part of it?
Well, we have an internal media team. We like to stay away from sponsoring.
Right.
We like to stay away from sponsoring because everyone and their brother and uncle and cat asks us to sponsor events.
Got it.
And we would be out of business if we said yes to everyone.
Uh-huh.
Plus, there's something about just paying for the opportunity to maintain a relationship
that
doesn't feel quite right to us.
Right.
So we do a lot of different things. You know, we have in the past filmed segments with our own internal team. We have a media department, film segments for our high-end, our level A partners, and then promoted them on social
and
broadcasted them to real estate agents and other potential referral partners.
Very interesting. So now this was my follow-up question. You'd mentioned you have a media team, or some people might call it a marketing team. So I want to break this down a little bit. The social postings and the activity that you that you engage in on social platforms, is that the two of you, or is it team members who do it, or a combination of the two?
Yeah, so it is a marketing team. Like, we call it a marketing team. It's I technically run it, even though Matt and I both have a lot of input in it. And it's made up of Jill, our executive assistant, Roth, our social media specialist or strategist, and ZB, who is our full-time videographer and editor.
Uh-huh.
And again, going back 3 years, like literally every single post and every single engagement, well, every single post was done by me and engagements Matt and I both did, et cetera, but we did all of the social. That we never delegated a second of that until literally about 3 months ago.
Okay.
And that's why it was what it was, is because we really had our hands on it. And we were very tactical in how we did certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we were doing our own video editing. We were doing our own video production with an iPhone. Like, it wasn't like we had the best technology. We just kind of did it, got through it, and then once we got traction, we said, okay, now let's bring in an expert. Let's make it better. So that's been every single step. Okay, we booked our own meetings. Okay, let's bring in an expert and let's make it better. We did our own videos. Okay, let's bring in an expert and make it better. And you see how this is going.
Yeah.
We feel like we've done that in every single department. And the key with that is the training aspect of it, of making sure that they get the purpose and the end result in mind, and then letting them add their own creativity and go. And it's really been a good, so our marketing team, Matt just referenced, you know, we've only done a couple of those videos. Like, that's not the core thing the marketing team does.
Right.
You know, we're very creative based on our partners and what they need and what they do. But what we really have our marketing team really doing is following us around in a lot of our speaking engagements and a lot of our networking and highlighting our partners while our kind of show is going on.
So they're shooting video and they're posting video and maybe taking pictures and posting them. What platform in your business? What social platforms do you participate in, and which ones? And let's go through them one at a time. Personal lines, right? So Facebook.
I don't care what comes out next, we'll be on it if it's necessary.
Okay.
Like, we're not emotionally attached to any platform, but Facebook and Instagram, and specifically Instagram right now, are obviously the biggest ones.
Yeah.
We're on Twitter just to be on it.
Uh-huh.
We've tried Snapchat. We didn't love it.
Got it.
So we kind of don't do too much there. We're on LinkedIn. We're on YouTube. I mean, the actual platform is not as important as where you think your referral partners or your clients are.
Right.
That's
okay,
so in your
business,
auto insurance,
Facebook and Instagram are probably pretty dominant platforms.
Yeah.
Okay, and LinkedIn maybe less in your situation with the strong personal lines emphasis.
Well, it's just for a different strategy.
Yeah, but you've got those B2B relationships, right? So you've got the, you know, your business comes from relationships with professionals, so they probably are on LinkedIn. It's just that your customers may be less.
All of the different channels are valuable, but really the objective is to stay top of mind in a positive light.
Right.
Because with you go back to it, 1,000 referral partners, there's a few handful that we can really deepen and strengthen and see on a consistent basis.
Right.
You just can't. But with social media, if you're offering really valuable, creative, innovative, fun content that people actually want to consume, which is going to be dependent on the medium that you choose, right? People aren't going on LinkedIn to laugh at funny videos about whatever.
Cat videos, like, right.
Right? You're not.
Right.
So understanding why people are clicking on that app and opening that application is the first like point, you know, of discussion.
And then
you go on from actually how do we create content that people want to watch and how do we surround it around our brand.
It's so setting aside the now that you've delegated some of it, but so let's go back 4 months. In the course of a typical day, how long do you think between the two of you spent on social from a business perspective?
Are we talking about now or
no? Back then, but before you delegated.
Yeah, I mean, I would head it up, so I'd probably spend some bit of time every 2 hours on it.
Okay, really?
And
interesting.
The reason why, Michael, is because it was my focus, and like I was responsible for it. And when Matt and I divvy out responsibilities, it's not like, oh, I got to go on social. It's like, no, it's like the most important thing I have to do
now. Yeah, okay, got it.
I
got
to do it. Yeah, and I would need a lot of Matt's help for engagement and a lot of things we were doing and a lot of also personal posts in both our pages linking. So the typical agent that we talk to looks at social media as an I have to. We look at social media as I need to. Because it's helping that much.
All right.
Like we have to do it. It's so important. It's not like, I have to. It's like, oh my God, I need to. Like, I gotta get going.
I also think that Zach, a lot of agents are not even agents. It has no specificity to the actual industry. It's not insurance like specific. But most people have a ton of trouble sticking to it because it's one of the first things that fall off the list when. They have clients calling, when they have, you know, complaints from vendors, when they have referral partners who decide that they want to cancel meetings or reschedule. I mean, world chaos happens on a daily basis.
Right.
And I think the reason why we were able to, why Zach specifically was able to spend so much time and effort and concentration was because so much of the other stuff were delegated out and systematized throughout the agency. So, like, process is kind of not sexy, but it is critical.
Critical. Right.
If you want to grow and scale and delegate and expand and become an entrepreneur and not an agent.
Okay. So, I mean, clearly, the two of you have identified those activities which happen on a repetitive, redundant basis over and over again, and you've created clear, efficient, and effective processes that deliver reliable results.
Correct.
Okay. There is one other area I have to explore before we're done. Okay. The other side of the business, the customers, the actual insurance customers. So if I have this right, you know, normally from a marketer's perspective, I'm looking at how do you attract, convert, optimize, and retain clients. So the attract part sounds like you've got that wired through this other part of the business, your referral partners, right?
Correct.
And that, so I mean, maybe you do other things, but this really seems like this is the engine that's driving the top of the funnel. And
correct.
Then, so then they make an inbound call and they're coming really warm, right? So your closing ratio is high. And did you mention at some point, four policies offered, like was that something that I'm pulling that out of memory from a previous conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is an like the great thing about proven processes is they're only proven until you've proven a better way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you can establish proven systems and proven processes with the mindset of we're going to constantly improve and tweak to make it better. And so when we did finally get out of the sales process ourselves, mm-hmm. we didn't have the best systems, the best proven process, and like the greatest training, and the, you know, to set our sales reps up to succeed the level that we were. But we improved and we continued to tweak, and we then built management and we built leadership
yeah.
teams, and
uh-huh.
et cetera. So it has changed over time, but yes, we have desired results for every single process that's built.
Got
and
it. Yes.
Specific
All right.
things that have to happen to produce the desired results.
All right. So we have partners that generate leads. We have internal processes that manage the businesses efficiently and effectively. And now we've got these 10,000 plus customers. And I'm going to presume that they don't get ignored for a year until it's time to hit them up again for your, you know, for the commission. Okay. So safe presumption with you guys, I think. What do you do to deepen and strengthen relationships with customers?
Yeah, so what we are doing, and it's always ever evolving, and actually we thought we were doing things in a really great way. We have a great renewal retention percentage that mm-hmm. feels good, and
yeah.
it's higher than industry average, and we're really proud of it.
Right.
But we actually listened to a chat from Billy Williams at a BrainShare event in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and we totally rewrote a bunch of our processes that we're going to start doing in Q4 because we're learning.
Right.
So where Matt and I can raise our hand and say, you know what, we think we are the best at X, Y, and Z, and to us it's probably branding, culture, networking, and sales.
Yeah.
Like we think we're like really sit there and we really can... That's what we can hone our grip around. But the service process, we're constantly trying to get better. We don't think that we can put our stake in the ground and say we have the best renewal process in the world. Come challenge it. But what Billy Williams added to our processes is really great. He basically says to try to find weaknesses on every single renewal and find two weaknesses and present that to the client. And if they don't want it, that's fine. Just document the file that you talked about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the... go ahead, Chuck.
No, just to piggyback on that and enhance that a little bit too, I think we always looked for a while, and I think a lot of the industry does, look at the renewal process as we need to touch these people in the hopes that they continue to renew with us. And Zach and I sat down the other day, especially after we chatted with Billy, and we're mm-hmm. like, well, why don't we flip this on its head, because that's a really passive sort of cross your fingers mentality. You know, we were doing a lot of good things on renewal, but we weren't really sure if it was leading to the desired results we wanted, which was increased retention, increased premium.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're flipping the switch now and looking this at the renewal process shouldn't be about passively hoping they stick, and more of a proactive approach to identify opportunities to increase premium, increase touch points that actually can lead to sales, which the byproduct is going to be increased retention because we're touching them with quality discussions on renewal.
Right.
But we're looking at it more of a sales process, less of a service renewal process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So,
if you don't have auto, home, umbrella, and flood, we're going to offer it to you on renewal, and there's going to be a reason why.
Yeah. Okay. And then do you offer anything beyond that? Do you have some customers who have more than just those four policies?
Yeah, we have. You know, rental clients.
Yeah, okay.
We've got, you know, master condos and apartment buildings. A lot of our personal lines clients have those needs as well. For a little while, we were doing commercial and life insurance, but we stopped doing both because it was much easier to scale faster vertically if we were stayed hyper-focused on the bullseye.
Got it. All right. So, guys, I think one of the interesting parts of this story is that you didn't come into this industry in this age with a lot of bad habits. and I say that, you know, a little bit facetiously, because frankly, a lot of the bad habits today were really good habits. They were good routines back in the 1990s. they obviously, some of those things need to be let go of and they need to be transformed and some new routines and protocols need to be introduced. You guys didn't have to do any of that really hard transition stuff. But what you did do
was you approached the industry really clearly with a, you know, what obviously is a very well-conceived strategy and really, really good execution. So, guys, one last question for you, okay? Take this any way you want, but if you could deliver a cogent message to your peers, owners of retail insurance agencies, what would you say?
Listen to Michael's podcast.
And we're done. By the way, yeah, who I can't remember who answered the phone originally and said, oh, it's Michael Janz. Your voice is as buttery on the phone as it is on the podcast. That is not how I think of my voice, but I am a raving fan of yours now forever, okay? So,
well,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, you had me at butter.
I think to answer the question, you know, we have a lot of, you know, you could, to narrow it down to one recommendation is kind of tough. But for us, I mean, hiring a coach that was outside of the industry was really beneficial to us. It helped educate us on how to be entrepreneurs and business owners and not just insurance agents.
Very good.
And a lot of our success, at least the last 3 years of scaling out of the business, is a byproduct of systems and structure and not necessarily you know, lead gen and sales process and service process, the overarching, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. Gentlemen, congratulations on your success. And on behalf of our listeners, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and so generously.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
You bet. It was terrific.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.